Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Now get two sausage McMuffin with egg sandwiches for just $5. That's right, $5. And with many locations opening at 5 a.m. or earlier, your morning starts when you do. Order ahead on the app, skip the wait, and grab your breakfast on your schedule. It's mornings made better at McDonald's. Price and participation may vary. Must opt into rewards.
The Anton Savage Show, Saturday morning at 9 on News Talk.
It's being reported that Virginia Giuffre, the woman who reached a settlement following accusations against Prince Andrew, a very significant settlement from Prince Andrew, and of course who was sex trafficked by Jeffrey Epstein, has been found dead, reports would suggest, by her own hand at her home in Australia. With me is Connor McGovern, who is a Nine News reporter in Australia. Connor, what do we know so far?
Hi, Anton. Yeah, so it was about last night, Western Australian time, 10 to 10 in the evening, that police were called to a farm that Virginia Giuffre has been living at. This is a little farm, probably about 100 kilometres north of Perth on the far west coast of Western Australia. So we're going on about 18 hours now. And when they found police arrived and emergency services there, they tried to administer first aid. But as you said, sadly, she did die there at the farm that she's been living at in the last few years since that settlement that you just referred to. And her family's come out this morning and they've made a statement and they've said that, sadly, as you said, it was by her own hand. She did die by suicide. So, again, it's sad news coming out of Western Australia today to say that she has sadly taken her own life. And her family, they made a very emotional statement. They said that she was a lifelong victim, that she was a hero, and she will always be remembered for her incredible courage to come forward. As you said, we obviously have to stress that Prince Andrew has strenuously denied these allegations, but she is very much seen as a survivor and someone who's had a lot of courage to come forward and to talk about that. So her family, and she survived by three children, they are obviously very upset and very traumatised by what's coming out of our Western Australia here this afternoon.
And the last few weeks have been chaotic in her life, it would seem.
Yeah, chaotic, yes. Chaotic's one way to say it. It's certainly been a strange and turbulent time. It was only about 3 or 4 weeks ago where she posted to Instagram that she only had 4 days to live. She was in a what was otherwise probably a little bit of a nondescript car crash. Again, not too far from her home, about an hour north of Perth, the capital city of Western Australia. And she posted to Instagram from a hospital bed, and she had bruising on her neck and on her face, and she'd gone into renal kidney failure, and that she only had 4 days to live. So it was something that, again, captured global headlines, given how widely known she is. And it was one that perhaps came as a bit of a surprise to police and emergency services here, because they had responded to that car crash that she said that she was in with this bus, but they said it was a very minor incident, and they were only travelling slowly. There was only a small amount of minor damage to the car. Virginia came out later, a couple of days after posting that, and after this, again, it captured global headlines. She said, look, this was only supposed to go to my private Facebook page, not my public Instagram following, which, again, many people did find that. So she did come out and did temper that 4 days to live a little bit, but she was then discharged And then she's been living out her last few weeks back on this farm north of Perth. So again, it has obviously been a very strange and a very turbulent, chaotic time for her over those last few weeks since she was in that car accident.
Conor, thank you so much for that reporting this morning. That's Conor McGovern, Nine News reporter there from Australia. With us is Jack Horgan-Jones, who's political reporter with the Irish Times, and Gina London, communications specialist and former CNN correspondent, current Sunday Independent columnist. This strikes me, Gina, as one of those things where the conspiracy theorists are going to have a field day, given the conspiracies that already surround everything to do with Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, yeah, of course. And you can imagine you can only imagine the turmoil of the mental health of a woman who, by her own description, was sex trafficked from the time she was a teenager and then became a bit of the poster woman, for lack of a better description, while this whole case was unfolding, and then the interview with Prince Andrew, and of course that picture of her with Prince Andrew's arm around her is iconic, and it was used in every documentary and now through the proceedings, and then even through the Trump administration now there have been when are the full Epstein files coming out, and so she's always been in a fishbowl. And even if you were given a settlement, which of course was undisclosed from Prince Andrew, and you're married and then you've got three children, you still have that specter with you every step of the way. And look, speculation, but we can only imagine the mental health of this woman.
Yeah, because I suppose
her life was started.
You can never get away from the most traumatic experience in your life.
It was formative during her younger years. So of course that those kinds of things exceedingly mark you. And it's a very sad situation. Even though we had Ghislaine Maxwell in prison, and of course Jeffrey Epstein died in prison, and there's just more questions even still. So I think you're right. Of course, there'll be conspiracies around it, and hopefully that there'll be a lot of concern. And I, at this point, think about her three children, and how that ripple effect may go on. I hope it doesn't.
In a statement, her longtime spokesperson, Dini von Mifflin, described her as one of the most extraordinary human beings I have ever had the honour to know, and said that she was a beacon to other survivors and victims, and that it was the privilege of a lifetime to represent her. And she was, of course, 41 years of age. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. If you want to get in touch, or 087 1400 106. As we speak, the funeral of the Pope is continuing. The Dean of the College of Cardinals, Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, is in charge of ceremonies on what is a crystal clear sunny day in the centre of Rome. It looks like the turnout is absolutely phenomenal, Jack.
Enormous, yeah. I was just looking at the live footage there that you have on in the studio, Anton, and you know, teeming with people, St. Peter's Square, as you would imagine. But I think that what has been remarkable, maybe not so remarkable, but certainly striking over the last few days, has been the kind of the level of outpouring of public emotion, and the degree to which a lot of people seem to have felt a kind of personal affinity or connection with Pope Francis. Now, of course, there's separate discussions about how long lasting his legacy will be. A lot of people were attracted to his rhetoric, to his positioning, particularly people who have a kind of more liberal interpretation of Catholic theology, or would like to see the church move in a more liberal direction. How long lasting that will be, the extent, the depth of his reforms, or whether it was more about rhetoric and positioning, I think that remains to be seen, and to a certain extent will be determined by his successor. But look, you know, it's always remarkable, I think, to see huge numbers of people in such a moment of observance, and nothing, I suppose, or very few things in the world kind of unite so many people as the death and funeral and the celebration of the life of a Pope, and particularly it seems in this instance, this Pope.
It's also interesting to see the sheer scale of the Catholic Church when you put it on TV at its prime level. I mean, the cardinals, the scale of the Vatican, the scale of proceedings and ceremony, all of the various tradition and dogma that is wrapped up in it, it may not be what it once was. It is still a remarkable organization.
Well, when you think about 1.4 billion people across the world, and now you're seeing heads of states from many countries, you're seeing, of course, Donald Trump is there as our many other heads of states, and you also see the royalty members that are there and the people from all over the world. While Catholicism is declining across Europe, it is on the increase in Asia and Africa, and which also makes us then wonder where the next pope may come from. There's talk that there's a Philippine cardinal who is considered to be Francis 2.0, and there are a number, I think one in Ghana in particular, that may be also considered a cardinal that may be considered as a pope. Although I did hear a wonderful quote that was said recently since the Pope Francis has died, that if you go in being described as a pope for the conclave, you're very likely to go out as a cardinal. So don't put any bets on it too quickly. But this outpouring, as we're seeing again here from the live feed in the studio, does demonstrate what impact the pope, the Catholic Church, still has globally.
It's also an interesting exercise in protocol. I was reading about the decisions made around which countries get announced first, get to sit beside each other, which world leaders. And there was a lot of questions about whether or not people like Volodymyr Zelensky would be in close proximity to Donald Trump. Likewise, where would Joe Biden be with Trump and all the rest of it? It seems that that has been well navigated. From what we can see, there's nobody close enough in any of the pictures for anybody to draw any inferences from the positioning.
Seemingly, although I think you were saying before we went live that Joe Biden is closer next to Donald Trump, is he?
No, there was a suggestion that he might be, but there is no sign of him. No, there seems to be a decent enough
managed to steer him away. Yeah, it's interesting, actually. We have a Pope funeral WhatsApp group set up and work to coordinate the live coverage. And I was keeping an eye on that this morning. And Patsy McGarry, who covered religious affairs for the Irish Times for many years, is over there pinging updates into that group. And he was talking about the logistics of it, you know, and you know, the media scrum and all the photographers competing for the best vantage point. The print guy's way up the back, and the tier B world leaders and dignitaries having filtered in and sitting in that bright Roman sunshine for quite some time already, and then just before the ceremonies began, the tier A, the Macrons and the Trumps, going and taking their seats. So look, I mean, no one does pomp, circumstance, and ceremony and ritual like the Catholic Church, and you overlay that with the star wattage of political and diplomatic power from around the world, it makes for a remarkable spectacle in a city that does spectacle well.
And I see, just looking at the pictures that are running, Donald Trump seems to be setting himself apart in that in a sea of black suits and black ties, he's opted for blue.
He doesn't do things normally, does he?
So no, this is most definitely true. And we will come to some of the implications of that and the output of that in a second, because news from America that a judge has been arrested by the federal authorities from her own courtroom. But before that, matters closer to home and housing. And there are figures this morning in respect of both housing and in respect of homelessness. The Irish Times reporting that the number of people in homelessness has reached a record high of 15,418, and among them 4,500 children. It in itself, another new record. Gina, we hit records, I remember, 3-4 years ago, about 11,000, and were told this was the peak and it was an emergency and it was a horror, and we're now north of that by what, 40%?
Look, I moved here 10 years ago and it was called a crisis then, and clearly the idea of a crisis is something that you want to take on and address immediately and make some changes and make some differences. And so over the course of the 10 years, I would now say that this is a chronic problem. And when you normalize something almost and let it become a chronic problem, then despite the rhetoric, it's the realities and the outcomes that are what to make a difference. And we're not seeing the changes. And this is absolutely something that, of course, the new government now is saying that they're going to address. And now we have this new person coming in for the Department of...
But of course, the challenge is the new government is the old government.
This is the problem, isn't it? Is that there's been the new government, the old government, the coalition, and yet the numbers still continue to grow and the problem hasn't been addressed in any real impactful way.
The Irish Times has an interesting piece on the tensions that may be bubbling within the coalition as a result of the challenge in trying to get the homelessness issue solved, written by an up-and-coming young journalist by the name of Jack Horgan-Jones.
I'll take it.
Jack, your analysis...
I hear he's destined for good things.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
He's overrated.
Your analysis is suggesting that there is tension, but not that there is blood on the walls and this is seen as hair on fire, get it resolved immediately.
Well, I mean, so the piece is kind of trying to get under the bonnet of a few things that the coalition is getting to grips with in its early days. But I think it's impossible to get away from housing and the housing crisis and the grave and growing sense that the acuity around the housing situation is in fact getting worse. The last coalition, it's interesting. So we had, as you said, the homelessness or the emergency accommodation figures last Friday just gone. You remember the government before the last one, Owen Murphy, the housing minister, embattled, struggling, as we now know from his book about mm-hmm. his time in the Department of Housing. These monthly homelessness figures became almost a death knell for him. It was just this drumbeat every single month that pounded him into the ground. And while Dara Bryan, his successor, the former Minister for Housing, suffered that to an extent, it never seemed to damage him to quite the same degree. And part of that was because certainly for the last few years, you had the trajectory of housing output going up, nowhere near what it needed to be, but at least improving. So at least you had this kind of narrative that, you know, often the government would say, we have turned a corner on housing. The problem is that has now collapsed. And talking to people within government for this piece this week, they were saying our fear is that this is more representative, this being the lower output level, this is more representative of the capacity of the housing sector in general. And what we were seeing for 2022 and 2023 was pent up stuff from COVID. It was just a release of the pressure valve. So they think, they fear that they're going to be stuck around the 30,000 level, well short of their targets, well short of what is needed. And they describe it, quite frankly, as an effing disaster.
Mm. And is the supposition that some Deus Ex Machina event will occur over the next couple of years that will solve this before they have to go back to the people? Or do they think it will be thus all the way through the entire term of government?
So they keep saying that they will do radical things. The problem is that I think if there was one radical thing you could do, if you could hit a button that produced more houses, it would have been done by now. This is a complex problem, as I think I've said in this studio before, and there's no one measure you can take. And also, when you hit that button or pull that lever, you don't know exactly the output of that for several years hence. So it's a wicked problem that's obviously very difficult to solve. And they've said that they're willing to look at every and any possible, you know, policy action to address it. This is also overlaid with no small degree of politics, where you have Fine Gael kind of sniping from the sidelines already about the performance of the now current housing minister, James Brown, saying that he hasn't hit the ground running. There's been some wobbly media performances. You know, he doesn't have the kind of, you know, the ducking and diving, harder to hit a moving target kind of showmanship that Dara Bryan had. And I think that the risk, I suppose, is that the pressure kind of begins to build on him in the same way that it did on Owen Murphy.
Can I ask you about how much it is being treated as an emergency? Because if you look at the arrival of the new administration in the US, whatever you think about their methods, it is evident that they take immigration tremendously seriously. And you can point to a series of steps that they have immediately taken. And there is a sense of impetus to what they are doing. Again, whether or not you agree with it. Is the same true of housing in Ireland?
Well, I mean, in a very literal sense, they have not declared an emergency. And that may sound like a rhetorical thing, but it's actually not. And to return to Owen Murphy's book that he published last year, that was something that he said he wanted to do, because it's not rhetoric. It does, things flow from that. You can effectively kind of sideline some of the kind of the planning conditions, and it increases your power to intervene. So the question is, why have they not done that? I mean, maybe they don't want to be seen to be overly skittish, but the fact of the matter is that I think, personally anyway, if they don't generate some momentum in housing, that is the kind of thing that will bleed this coalition dry before its term. If they can't show that they are actually making a difference on housing, I think it can be difficult to see them go in the full term if they can't show that they're solving that biggest problem. You know?
And real quickly, because Jack mentioned the complexity of all of this, and absolutely I agree. And yet, one of the things that continues to be hammered around is something that needs to be completely overhauled is the planning process in this country, and the way that it is not streamlined, and the 2 years in minimum that it can take for developers. And so until and when that is actually overhauled and streamlined, and there are many other places that do it well and do it better, that they could look for role modeling, then it's all, it is a rhetorical discussion and not something that is being put into real action.
I cited the country of your birth as evidence of what happens when an administration proves that they really care about a topic, in this instance, immigration, which undoubtedly the Trump administration does. The manner in which they're tackling it is interesting, I think, is probably the most diplomatic way to describe it. Yesterday, a sitting Wisconsin judge by the name of Hannah Duggan was arrested by federal authorities from her
in
own
her
courtroom.
Courtroom. In her courtroom. So let's go to Wisconsin and picture that this woman, the circuit court judge, the county circuit judge, her name is Hannah Duggan. And she's in there. She's getting ready to process an undocumented alien who's in there for other reasons, apparently. And ICE agents come in to essentially arrest him. And she says, wait, you don't have a signed warrant. You need to go see the Chief Justice. And
this is in her courtroom.
This is in her courtroom at 8:30 yesterday morning. And then they come in, and then, well, and then they come back in to get her and take her forcibly out. And pictures are posted of her in handcuffs being led out of her own courtroom. Protests are up. Now she has been released, but she is going to be going through a process now. They've charged her with obstruction because, as I just mentioned, there was a illegal alien. His name is Eduardo Flores. What is his name? At any rate, Eduardo Flores Ruiz. Yeah, I couldn't remember his last name. And so she said, you don't have the proper signed warrant. She told him and his attorney to go stand out in the hallway. And then, as I mentioned, the FBI, Kash Patel, sent in federal agents. They came and they took – he actually posted about it. And then he deleted
the
post. This is Kash Patel, the head of the FBI, the Trumped, the children's book writer about how great Trump is, that now is the head of the entire FBI and was only a low-level judiciary attorney before in the first administration. But at any rate,
and just to quote him,
he said,
the FBI arrested Judge Hannah Duggan out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on charges of obstruction after evidence of Judge Duggan obstructing an immigration arrest operation last week. Thankfully, our agents chased down the perp on foot and he's been in custody since. But the judge's obstruction created increased danger to the public. To have the head of the FBI and a sitting judge, to have the FBI describe a sitting judge that way.
And exactly. And then, like as I mentioned, he since deleted that post. But then as Bernie Sanders, of course, the independent senator from Vermont, just posted himself on social media. He says, let's be clear, Trump's arrest and that by Trump, the Trump administration's arrest of Judge Duggan in Milwaukee has nothing to do with immigration. This is the latest attack on one thing, unchecked power. And he says that it's time for my colleagues in the Republican Party to stand up to his growing authoritarianism.
Meanwhile,
so the ends, the means do not be, are not justified here.
The most senior law officer in the U.S., that being the Attorney General, Pam Bondi,
who was once an actual personal attorney for Trump.
She has weighed in on Fox News.
Madam, what's happened to our judiciary is beyond me.
Yeah, so when the American public hears this and they think these were once upstanding people in their communities and their professions, and they put it all on the line for this, I mean, have you dug into their motive? Like, what inspired them to carry out these acts and harbor criminals?
They're deranged is all I can think of. I cannot believe. I think some of these judges think they are beyond and above the law, and they are not. And we're sending a very strong message today. If you are harboring a fugitive, we don't care who you are. If you are helping hide one, if you are giving a TDA member guns, anyone who is illegally in this country, we will come after you and we will prosecute you.
Due process. Those are the words that I keep saying. I have a friend of mine whose son is in college in the United States. His roommate is a Chinese student with a student visa who now refuses to go out of his dorm room. He's doing all of his classes online because he is absolutely afraid, because there is not due process right now in the United States. People can be taken and questions are asked later.
Well, we're going to be talking to Scott Lucas a little bit later on about the impact that's having on academics, because there are reports that an awful lot of academics are seeking tenure elsewhere if they are non-US nationals for exactly those reasons. Before we wrap up, Jack, the story that made a lot of news last weekend was that the Freemasons had rented their hall
to Conor McGregor to be interviewed by Tucker Carlson. They were mortified, apparently, when they discovered this, and has since made a €2,500 donation to charity and apologised and said they will be more careful about who gets the haul. Turns out they lent it to a McGregor company as well.
Yeah, so this is...
rented, I should say.
Yeah, they rented it to a rapper, Dublin rapper, called Eskimo Supreme, who is on Conor McGregor's, I think it's Greenback, I think is the name of the record label. And I mean, I have to tread carefully here given the hour and the fact that this is a family program, but I mean, let's just say that the depiction of someone resembling the British Queen and what happens thereafter, if anyone's curious enough to subject themselves to
the single
to the
most
video,
obscene thing made in recent memory.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, crass, vile.
I don't think crass fully does it justice.
Yeah,
does it?
No, it's beyond, it's way beyond the pale. And it's online if anyone wants to see it. And I think that, you know, perhaps that's all we should say about the content. But
yeah,
obviously,
Eskimo is getting a lot of great publicity out of this.
Very much so, yeah.
Freemason should consider reviewing their rental agreement policy.
But this is,
I think they now are.
So they're now saying they're investigating it. Like, and I suppose, you know, if one wanted to be kind of charitable to the Freemasons, you know, they probably rent. I know they rent this thing out all the time for filming and interviews and events and so on. So perhaps the kind of due diligence they have over exactly what's happening thereafter is not world class. And perhaps it hasn't had to be hitherto.
Eight men dressed in army camouflage and balaclavas and a chain link fence being brought into your premises would normally throw up a red flag.
Yeah, you're driving more people with these kind of breadcrumbs. You know? I think there's some suggestion that some part of it may have been filmed elsewhere. But look, I mean, you know, I think... At the bare minimum, they have to increase their due diligence over who they're renting this to.
Now, because of this report list, watch the number of video hits
online. Tempted to watch it, don't. Jack Horgan-Jones, thank you very much. Jack Horgan-Jones, political reporter of the Irish Times. Likewise, Gina London, communications specialist and Sunday Independent columnist. Coming up after the break, we'll hear about the Danish way of hair.
The Anton Savage Show, Saturday morning at 9 on News Talk. Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Now get two sausage McMuffin with egg sandwiches for just $5. That's right, $5. And with many locations opening at 5 a.m. or earlier, your morning starts when you do. Order ahead on the app, skip the wait, and grab your breakfast on your schedule. It's mornings made better at McDonald's. Price and participation may vary. Must opt into rewards.